serving as a scout platoon leader in Kandahar, Afghanistan. And, you know, I was leading men and women out on patrol every day. And I was really leaning on a lot of those lessons I learned at West Point, recognizing what it meant to really put character first in everything that we're doing. So the Army taught me how to bring people together to solve hard problems, skills that have guided me every step since.
720 WGN, high atop Chicago in the Skyline studio. And as we honor the sacrifices of those who have served, it's so great to have on an Army veteran, a West Point grad, and former deputy director of the Peace Corps, the one and only David E. White Jr. David, welcome to WGN.
Thanks so much, Dane. Great to be here.
So a lot of recognition, you know, for men and women in uniform appropriately on a day like today. And as we're asking a lot of the people that are on with us, you know, because here's the thing is, you know, there are a lot of Americans who see it as a holiday, right? It is a holiday that is celebrated oftentimes with food and cookouts and barbecue. It is the kickoff to summer. So whether it's school kids or people that are just enjoying kind of getting into that summer season, they think of this as one of those hallmark days related to that. But you, as a person who has served, how are you spending Memorial Day?
Yeah, certainly. So Memorial Day is really a moment to pause, to remember those who gave everything in service to our country. For me, it's personal. I served in combat, lost friends, and think of them every day, but especially today on Memorial Day. So we'll be spending the day quietly as a family, reflecting. My wife and I will talk with our 10-month-old son about what service means, not just in uniform, but in life.
And it's one of the things I think that is important. We're doing that a ton here on WGN Radio, is being able to showcase and highlight that aspect of it. As people do want to be festive on a day like today, the reflection side of it is so important. And just the difference between this and maybe Labor Day or the 4th of July, right, where we celebrate our country, this is a time to really reflect your journey in service, the U.S. Military Academy, West Point, as we come off another graduation. Do you think, as you reflect and you remember those times, such a pivotal time in your life, and, you know, as I talk and know with many of the graduates there, part of the Long Gray Line, one of the things is that it's such a tight bond, you know, that brotherhood. And I know people that are in the armed forces have that same kind of feeling. But your thoughts on West Point as another class graduates?
Yeah, huge congratulations to the cadets walking across the stage. We often talk about at West Point, it's not just graduation, but also the commissioning. This idea that young men and women are going from college students or cadets, not only graduating, but commissioning now as second lieutenants in the United States Army. And with that comes a ton of responsibility to lead America's sons and daughters. West Point played a huge role in kind of my life's journey. I arrived there when I was just 17 years old. I knew I wanted to serve my country, but, you know, needed help figuring out exactly what that was going to look like. So having graduated and learned what it means to lead with integrity and to have that character and to lead even when no one's watching, I think is so important. So this weekend, I would really tell those cadets, you know, get ready. You're stepping into an uncertain world. You're going to be leading soldiers, and that's a heavy responsibility, but also an incredible privilege.
As they're kind of embarking on the next phase in their journey in service, and you who have had a little bit of that time to be able to look back and reflect on what it all meant, what does it mean for the people that are listening? And everyone has heard of West Point, but it is, I think, a place that is somewhat mysterious. We know that it's an institution of higher learning and an aspirational place for a lot of people that are looking to take that step in college. But as you've had, you know, this amount of years, you know, maybe a couple decades, right, to look back and live that, kind of walk that walk as a West Point grad, what does it mean? Does it mean what you thought it would mean when you graduated?
Yeah, so I graduated more than 15 years ago, back in 2009. And I'll tell you, you know, I carry so many of the lessons from West Point with me today. And West Point is known probably more than anything for creating and crafting and really forging leaders of character. Leaders who, when are faced with kind of the easier wrong and the harder right, choose the harder right. And so it's also a phenomenal academic institution with a great lineup of classes and produce so many Rhodes Scholars each year and so forth. But, you know, really, particularly at wartime, like when I was graduating, I went off to Afghanistan and I was serving as a scout platoon leader in Kandahar, Afghanistan. And, you know, I was leading men and women out on patrol every day. And I was really leaning on a lot of those lessons I learned at West Point, recognizing what it meant to really, you know, put character first in everything that we're doing. So the Army gave me the confidence, the clarity under stress, and a deep sense of purpose. And it taught me how to bring people together to solve hard problems, skills that have guided me every step since.
Creating those leaders and leadership, right? It is more than just a college, right? It is a leadership factory in a bunch of different ways. And then heading off, did you see, as you were heading off into combat, did you see that as an opportunity to put all the things that you'd learned, all of that education and training to use in service of the country? Or were you looking at, you know, a lot of people, I'm sure tons of listeners are thinking, well, you get into the military, there's a lot of opportunities. It is a great career, but hopefully maybe you don't have to get in there and fight. Obviously you want peace. We'll talk about your journey in peace a little bit later, but your thoughts as you headed into the combat side.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in many respects, you know, recognizing that, you know, the military exists to hopefully avoid war, but when war becomes necessary to go to war, you could think of kind of going to war as the Super Bowl, so to speak. Not as exciting in the sense that, you know, you're cheering on a particular team, but kind of an analogy in this idea that you've been training for so long and recognizing that this is going to be something that you're going to face. Now, when I was at the academy between 2005 and 2009, we had the big surge in Afghanistan. So we had, by the time I was over in Afghanistan, I think it was something like 98,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. And I recognized that it was going to be important to bring my all every day. As I was going out of the wire every day as a scout platoon leader, I was a cavalry officer. I was either on my trucks, we had strikers, I commanded four of them with about 20, 25 soldiers, or we'd go out on a foot patrol. And some days we did two or three foot patrols in a single day. So in many respects, because you've trained and trained for years to get to this point, it's really special to be actually able to do it. And then it's a matter of making sure that you're doing right by the folks you're serving with, making sure, in my case, you're doing right by the Afghans you were serving with as well, and trying to get everybody home and accomplish the mission.
You think about, and there's so much about West Point, everything about it is history, right? So much history there. Not a lot of things change. That's one of the things that they pride themselves on, is that there is so much tradition, stability, consistency, and all that kind of stuff. But when you were coming through in a time where there was a current conflict, was there more of a real world, not an if, but when you get out, here's what exactly what you're going to be doing, where they maybe had people from, you know, that were out there in the field coming back to talk with you. Here's what you can expect next year or, you know, in a few months, as opposed to maybe this year's cadets, where we're living in a time of relative peace. There aren't any super current conflicts where you don't have that. You know, you always want to be prepared and ready, but not ready to do this exact thing right now.
Yeah, so it is an interesting thing, you know, because I came to West. I was in, let me start with maybe 9/11. So I was a freshman in high school when 9/11 happened. And then we were, you know, shortly thereafter in Afghanistan and then eventually in Iraq. And then the years that I was at West Point, 2005, 2009, they would actually announce every morning at breakfast when a classmate had been killed, a graduate of West Point had been killed. Jeez. So we'd be standing at attention behind our chairs at breakfast at, you know, 7 a.m. in the morning, maybe a little bit earlier. And they would announce when someone was killed in action from a previous day. And so we were reminded, I mean, every day, particularly when the fighting season would pick up in Afghanistan in the spring after it got warmer. I mean, sometimes you'd hear multiple names a day. And those were folks who oftentimes, because it was, you know, the second lieutenants, the platoon leaders that were most in harm's way, along with the soldiers that they were leading. These were sometimes folks I knew, right? Because West Point's not that big, about 4,000 or so cadets, 1,200 to 1,300 per class. And so that's something that you know, I thought a lot about. And then my brother actually went to West Point as well and served in the Army. So when I was wounded in Afghanistan back in 2012, he was at breakfast, I think, when he learned about that. And so it kind of made a full circle moment. Fortunately, I made it back, and he went on to serve in the Middle East as well. But it's definitely one of these things where if you went to West Point post 9/11, you knew that it was a matter of when, not if, you ended up serving in Afghanistan, Iraq, or in one of the other theaters in which we had troops deployed.
After your service, after everybody hopes, you know, to God that they'll be able to come back and is, you know, as intact as possible and be able to continue on. And one of the things I think that people appreciate about West Point, or at least notice, is that the network, the camaraderie, the long gray line, the opportunities that experience on the educational side and then afterwards offers you. And you, like so many of the cadets, have really made the most of it. Some very impressive stuff, you know, heading off for postgraduate to, you know, Harvard, right? And going on to an education there. Talk a little bit about that. And then as a guy who has faced every bit of it, like you said, wounded in conflict, in war, to get involved in the name, the Peace Corps, right? An iconic institution that's out there trying to make the world a better place. Talk about, you know, your journey after all of that.
Yeah, happy to, Dane. So after the Army, I went to Harvard Law School, not just to build skills, but to find new ways to serve. And really enjoyed that experience because it allowed me to figure out how do I continue to serve as a leader in public service. Kind of service for me has been a through line in my career. So I was then able to serve as a law clerk on a federal appellate court out in California. I then was in New York City at a law firm where I was learning a bit about mergers and acquisitions and restructuring and other things. And then I ended up having the opportunity to join the White House at the beginning of President Biden's term. So served at the White House, at the National Security Council. After our withdrawal from Afghanistan, got to work on the resettlement of Afghans in the United States. Folks I talk about as our newest neighbors. These were Afghan allies who I worked with, right, as I was over there for just under a year. And then I was very fortunate to be able to go over to the Peace Corps. And you might kind of question this idea of an Army veteran going over to the Peace Corps. Right. But, you know, the way that I think about it is war and peace are two sides of the same coin. So my time as Deputy Director of the Peace Corps gave me a unique perspective on the interplay between war and peace. Like I said, two sides of the same coin. So having served in combat and experienced the realities of war firsthand, I understood the cost of conflict deeply and personally. But the Peace Corps work showed me the power of peacebuilding in communities around the world. In the military, the mission is often to protect and defend through strength, sometimes involving hard choices and conflict zones. At the Peace Corps, the mission is to build trust, foster understanding, and help communities solve their own problems, one relationship at a time. Both roles require courage, leadership, and a commitment to service, but they operate on different parts of the spectrum. So this dual experience reinforced my belief that lasting security depends not just on military power, but on the strength of relationships, cultural understanding, and partnership. The Peace Corps exemplifies America's leadership when we choose to invest in people and peace, empowering others to lead their own futures. So in many ways, the work of the Peace Corps complements and supports our men and women in uniform. It's about addressing root causes of instability and providing resilience so that fewer communities need to see the hardship of war in the first place. That holistic approach to national and global security, kind of combining this strength and empathy and engagement, is something I believe we need more of as a country.
Let the listeners know we're talking with David E. White Jr. He's a Army veteran, West Point grad, Harvard Law grad, Deputy Director of the Peace Corps previously. And for those people, I think of the Peace Corps, and if you could just kind of share what it is that they're doing, you know, uplifting and supporting, you know, communities in different places around the world. And I think a lot of the listeners, I know for me, I think of them as like, you know, out there, like helping people dig wells, you know, or things, or helping with mitigation for malaria, or what is the Peace Corps doing these days? Has their mission and operation changed, or what's happening?
Yeah, great question, Dane. And always a pleasure to be able to talk about, you know, my work at the Peace Corps. So Peace Corps has been around a long time, since 1961 when President Kennedy started it. And it's really this idea of Americans being willing to get outside of their comfort zone, go someplace new, serve in one of more than 60 countries in which volunteers are serving today across like 14 or 15 different time zones. The Peace Corps has thousands of volunteers serving right now. And at the end of the day, they are investing in relationships, working with communities, and helping to kind of be force multipliers, if you will, really being invested in helping these communities tackle some really tough problems. And the Peace Corps is unique, and because it doesn't enter the scene and kind of dictate, okay, this is how we're going to do this, this is how we're going to do that. Instead, it's a listen first approach. They listen to the community and they say, hey, what kind of issues are you all experiencing? And then when it comes to figuring out how to solve those issues, it's also listening first. How do you think we might be able to go in solving them? So we have volunteers who are serving all over Africa and the Pacific Islands, across Asia, and they're doing everything from English language education, so actually in the classroom teaching English. They're teaching STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math in the classroom. There are agricultural volunteers who might be teaching farmers the latest techniques in farming and ensuring that they have access to drought-resistant seeds. When I was deputy director, I was out in Nepal inaugurating the first ever Peace Corps response program. And we had Peace Corps volunteers who were working on ensuring a diversification of a lot of the ecotourism work in Nepal. So it wasn't just about Mount Everest, but also all the other fun things to do in Nepal. So at the end of the day, there's really two ways that folks can get involved with Peace Corps. First is through the traditional Peace Corps program. It's a 27-month program. That's 3 months of in-country training where you learn the language, you learn the culture, you learn your craft, if it's going to be environmental resilience or agriculture or education or health, like you talked a bit about malaria. And then it's going to be 24 months of actually then being in your community, working with a local counterpart on those projects.
Wow.
And then for folks who are a little bit older and who are kind of mid-career or senior level professionals, we have this special program called Peace Corps Response. And so this is for folks who want to serve maybe 6 to 12 months, who are actually able to leverage the more unique skill set they have to benefit the place in which they're serving.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So I think for those people that are listening and they're hearing this, and this is that opportunity on Memorial Day to remember, to reflect, and also be educated, you know, some teachable moments here, and then also inspired. And so, David, as those people are here, not everybody, you know, is maybe of an age or even, you know, aspirationally thinking, well, I need to go to West Point. I'm sure there'll be some younger people who reach 38 states and Canada here at WGN, a huge signal. So I'm sure there are some people saying, I would like to do that. I would like to do some of those things, maybe all of those things that David did for other people. Maybe they want to get involved and support the Peace Corps, maybe get involved and support men and women in uniform, however they can. Any suggestions as people say, David, you've inspired me. What should I do or where can I start? You know, any suggestions?
Yeah, absolutely, Dane. So first I'd say service doesn't have to mean wearing a uniform. We need leaders in every space, public, private, and community, whether it's mentoring, volunteering, or just showing up. Everyone can contribute. And so if you're interested in, say, the Peace Corps, you should check out peacecorps.gov. Fantastic opportunities there to serve. But zooming out a little bit, I'll tell you, I've learned, you know, a lesson in kind of my whole career, and that is America's strength isn't just in our power, it's in our people. And when we come together across lines of difference, we're unstoppable. And so as we kind of think about ways to also serve and to support service members, I would tell folks to support organizations that help veterans transition, not just with jobs, but with purpose. And of course, saying thank you to a veteran is always a great thing to do, but also ask, what can I do? Whether it's hiring a veteran, attending a Memorial Day ceremony, or helping a military family, it all matters.
David E. White Jr., thank you for your service, sir, and for everything that you've done, not only on the service side, but also through the Peace Corps, and even, of course, for jumping on the show today. And thank you so much for being a part of the program.
Thanks so much, Dane. Take care.